In my mind, I still need a place to go. All my changes were there. Blue, blue windows behind the stars.
Naval forces will carry out live fire exercises in the Strait of Hormuz on February 1st and February 2nd, Press TV reported on Thursday, according to Reuters. The announcement comes amid elevated tensions between Washington and Tehran, with both sides positioning military capabilities in the region.
Behind the stars.
Let us begin to affect change in our own lives. You must understand, AI runs your life. As you seek eternal comfort, cream puffs, cotton candy, and rainbows, more suffering than more struggle creates battle-tested men. Are you making choices, or is someone else making choices for you?
Listening to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. Great episode today. This is actually high level stuff. This is Chase Hughes speaking. This just came out. So I pop up on YouTube and I said, you know what? This is perfect listening material here. As you know, Chase Hughes, I've done episodes on him in the past. And he's into that psychology, mind reading type, you know, how to read people in situations and strategically, like military level type stuff, you know, spy level type stuff. So he's really sharp dude. Been on fire. He's had a lot of good content on lately. So I saw this pop up and he's talking about God and the message that's trying to be put out there from years, you know, thousands of years ago. This talk is good. It's about 40 minutes, 35 minutes, and it warms up. In the beginning, it's okay. You're listening to it. It's good. But man, it builds up. I recommend listening to it from minute one all the way through the whole thing because he builds it up properly. Some people are not, you know, up to date, so they need to listen and kind of get an idea of what basis he's touching on. But he takes it very, very deep. By the time he's halfway into it, it's mind-blowing. He really touches on the ego and how really the only way to really reach true fulfillment is suffering, you know, suffering and then achievement as a result of that suffering. So it's really good, man. This Chase Hughes guy, I put him up there with the best of them right now. He just speaks fire, man. He speaks truth and you could hear it as he speaks it. Other than that, what's going on in the world right now, what I see, like Trump wants to go to war with Iran, but he knows it's not going to happen. like the past, because right now the way the world has changed, everything is now hypersonic missiles and just drones and satellite imaging. It's craziness right now, war. Look at what Russia's going through with Ukraine. Again, I'm not getting political on this, but it is what it is. Russia is really advanced on the ground. Like, they use motorcycles with binoculars and, you know, freaking bat urine and shit, you know, to figure shit out. Like, they're crazy the way they do things, man. You know, on the spot. Creative, you know? Improvised. War's different these days, man. And the sad thing is, you know, people die. These are all bankers' wars. And, you know, again, if you... This Chase Hughes touches on what I'm speaking on right now, but it's the truth. It's like... People these days, it seems like they've lost their self and they're looking for fulfillment in others or externals as opposed to realizing that it's already there within them, you know. So, and I talk about that all the time. I mean, I recommend you guys go back and read some of my, listen to some of my old episodes. What I like about this episode is he gets into the Upanishads, Buddhism, Taoism, you know, Hinduism, Christianity, the words of Jesus. He gets into real deep teachings. And he sees the unity in all of them. You know, I'm cleansed by the blood of the Lamb, Yeshua HaMashiach, the Merciful. That's my God. But, you know, the world is made of many people. And, you know, my responsibility is when I speak of my truth, then I speak of my truth, Jesus Christ, you know. But I'm not here to judge anybody. I'm here to spread truth. And that's another thing Chase Hughes touches on. Authenticity and truth are big deals now because there's so many lies that we're being fed. But like I've always said, truth just sounds like truth and BS sounds like BS. So not going to go any more than that. Again, I want to praise Yeshua HaMashiach, the Merciful's name, Jesus Christ's name. I want to thank you for tuning in and give this a listen. And probably at the end, I'll put a couple, a little bit of music on there too. So again, thank you for listening. Everything you hear on this podcast episode is Fair Use Creative Commons license.
Gonna go to the place that's the best. When I lay me down to die, going up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go when I die. When I die and I lay me to rest, I'm gonna go to the place that's the best.
Since I was like 10, I've been obsessed with ancient texts, and I do mean obsess. I read them and still read them like people read data reports. I compare all the versions and the translations, line-by-line comparisons, and something has always bothered me. I've been digging through ancient texts since I was little, and not like a handful, not like 10 or 20, I'm talking over 190 sacred writings from every corner of human civilization. Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, Jewish, Islamic, Taoist, Gnostic, Egyptian, Mayan, Hermetic, Confucian, Sumerian, Indigenous. These are texts written thousands of miles apart, thousands of years apart, with no way to influence each other. And yet, somewhere between the lines, they're all whispering the exact same message. And it's not similar. It's not a kind of like message. It's the exact same five truths over and over. So this video isn't body language and persuasion, and it's definitely not about religion in any way. So if your level of certainty about the world is super high, this might itch a little, and you know that certainty in human behavior shows up when something needs to be protected. So you do not have to agree with any of this to get something powerful from it. All right. There's something worth considering regardless of your faith or your background. First, if God or ultimate truth is real, then it or he or she existed way before any book, any language, or one single tradition ever appeared, which means that truth wouldn't belong to just one place or one people. Second, when civilizations that are separated by oceans and centuries describe the same insights about reality and human nature and meaning, it suggests they were observing something universal rather than inventing something locally. And just like gravity existed before we ever had a name for it, and mathematics works the same everywhere on Earth, truth, and I mean truth with a capital T, doesn't change based on culture or belief. It just gets described through different and very flawed human lenses. This is why the deepest spiritual experiences sound so unbelievably similar across traditions. And I think it's why history's greatest teachers didn't try to fracture humanity, but they tried to wake it up to something it already carried inside of it. Across every culture, every timeline, every belief system humans have ever built, when I first saw the pattern forming, it didn't feel like research in any way. It felt like finding a message that humanity buried, like fragments of a treasure map that we, as a species, were unconsciously developing for some future generation to find. And I think there are a few things that nobody wants to be said out loud. First, if truth is real, if it's fundamental, it should show up everywhere, in every era, every tribe, every myth, every scripture, and I think that it actually does. But somehow, I think we miss something. We get lost in the arguments about who's right. We get lost in the differences, the translations, the rituals, the politics, and the fear. And we started defending our favorite book instead of noticing what all the books were trying to say. If you can imagine dozens of civilizations who never met, they never traded language, they never shared a single word with each other, all describing the same fundamental truths of reality, what would that mean? What would that force us to consider? Because if that's true, then the greatest spiritual secret on earth was never hidden at all. It was just scattered like a puzzle all across our species' story. And if all of those pieces could come together, we might see something pretty astonishing. But before we talk about the message they left us, you have to understand why these truths were actually hidden in the first place. And they were hidden. This isn't debated. I promise it's not conspiracy and churches and governments that did it. It's way older than that. Before we go any further, you need to understand something that almost everybody gets wrong about all these ancient texts, because I know there's a lot of videos out there that talk about them. These ancient texts were not trying to be mysterious. They weren't trying to be poetic. They weren't trying to confuse anybody. They were trying to describe the utterly indescribable by using a human brain and human language that was never designed to grasp any of this at all. That is truly the core problem. Language. So language, any language, is a cage. It's a net with holes that are way too wide to catch something that's truly infinite. And the people who wrote these texts, they knew that. That's why Lao Tzu opens the Tao Te Ching with the most brutally honest sentence in the ancient texts altogether. The Tao that can be spoken is not the eternal Tao. The meaning is, the moment that you try to explain ultimate truth, you've already distorted it and filtered it and tried to contain it. Jesus understood this too. He literally tells the disciples that he speaks in parables because most people aren't ready to comprehend the truth directly. They didn't have language for quantum physics and non-duality or consciousness models like we do today, which is still an infantile language. They had to compress the infinite into words. So every ancient culture hit the exact same wall. How do you describe an experience bigger than thought itself with a language that's built out of thought? How do you describe God, unity, infinity, consciousness with a vocabulary built for farms and weather and trading spices and chickens with each other? How do you tell people the universe is one before they even understand atoms or galaxies or even their own mind? The answer is, you can't. So they did the only thing that they could. They spoke in metaphors and symbols and myths and stories, poetry and parables and riddles, and sometimes it was just silence. And they didn't do this to hide the truth. The truth was just too large to fit through the doorway of our primitive little language. If you can imagine standing in front of a sunrise so massive and overwhelming that words feel absolutely stupid to describe it. Now imagine trying to explain that sunrise to somebody who's never seen light before. This is why ancient texts seem contradictory. The problem wasn't the message. It was the translation. Different cultures, different metaphors, different symbols. It was the same truth filtered through different and extremely human limitations. And when you finally zoom out far enough, the differences disappear. The metaphors line up, the symbols overlap, and in my estimation, the contradictions dissolve. You start to see that these were fragments of maps. And once I noticed that, something insane happened. The patterns in these texts started connecting like constellations across all these continents, across millennia, across belief systems that supposedly are against each other. They weren't opposing each other at all. They were completing each other. And that's when these five truths revealed themselves. So here's where we go next. If every civilization on Earth discovered the same truths, if humans who never met somehow described the exact same reality, the question becomes, what exactly did they all see? Here's what they all agreed on. This is the first truth, the one the ancient world tried their absolute hardest to communicate to us, and it's also the one that we've gone the farthest away from. You are not separate. You never were, and you never could be. Every single ancient civilization on Earth figured this out. In the Upanishads from India, they had a saying called Tat Tvam Usi. I think that's how you pronounce it, but it basically means you are that. Not connected to it, not loved by it. You are the divine wearing this human costume. Jesus even said this. He said, the entire kingdom of God is within you, not in a building or a book, in you. In the ancient Sufi texts, they said, you are not a drop in the ocean. You are the entire ocean in a drop. If you look at Hermetic texts, all is one. If you look at Taoism, everything is the Tao expressing itself in 10,000 forms. If you look at the ancient Mayan text, which is called the Popol Vuh, you see heart of sky, heart of earth. This is the universe as a single living being. Even looking at Buddhism, there is no separate self. If you look inside the Kabbalah, which is one of my favorite quotes, they say creation is one emanation, divided only in appearance. And if you look into quantum physics, what are we starting to discover? Everything is one field, fragmented by perception. Different cultures, different metaphors, same exact truth. There is no you versus the world. There is only this one universe, like experiencing itself from your point of view. Separation is what they're trying to show us, is a hallucination. Being divided is a glitch in humanity, and isolation is not really real. This is the kind of the metaphor they're trying to get us to understand. When a wave rises up out of the ocean, it looks separate. It has its own little shape. It has its own motion, its own lifespan. But the wave is not actually a thing. It's the ocean, just for a few seconds, expressing itself in a temporary form. When you were born, that was the ocean rising. When you die, the wave goes back into itself. You never stopped being the ocean. You just forgot for a minute. And when every ancient text says things like one spirit, one God and Father of all, as above, so below. You are that. The kingdom is within. All is mind. Everything is the Tao. They're all trying to point at the same thing. You are the universe, aware of itself. You are the divine, looking out through human eyes temporarily. You are not the world. The world is in you. And here's the super raw part that they didn't say outright. Every mystic hinted at this. If you aren't separate, then your entire life, your entire identity, your whole entire worldview might just be built on a misunderstanding. And that misunderstanding is what makes most of us suffer. Because the moment that you believe that you're separate, you start fearing loss and death and rejection and scarcity. And we start chasing significance and validation and control. We start defending our little ego like it's sacred. But the moment that we remember what we actually are, the fear goes away. Conflict all dissolves. Loneliness goes away. Death changes meaning entirely. And life becomes something that we can finally understand. A single field of consciousness, somehow, playing out as billions of expressions, trying to remember itself. This is why truth number one sits at the foundation of everything else. Because if we are not separate from each other, and if you're not separate from the universe, then what comes next is the operating system of reality. Number two, fear is an illusion and love is the truth. So if the first truth is that you're not separate, the second truth is the one that keeps shaping your entire life without you realizing it. Fear is the greatest lie ever told. Love is the only thing that's real. Every ancient text, it doesn't matter the culture, it doesn't matter what language, repeats the same idea so many times it's almost suspicious. The most repeated phrase in the entire Bible is fear not, or do not be afraid. A quote from Jesus says, perfect love casts out fear. We hear the Buddha say, hatred does not cease by hatred. By love alone is hatred healed. In the Bhagavad Gita, we read, the path of devotion, love, leads to liberation. The path of ignorance, fear, leads to suffering. In the Tao Te Ching, we see, courage comes from love. Paralysis comes from fear. In the Dhammapada, we read, the mind is everything, meaning that fear starts in the mind and not the world itself. In ancient Sufi wisdom, we specifically see from Rumi, your job is not to seek for love, but to find and remove the barriers you built against it. How beautiful is that? All these civilizations that never spoke a single word to each other somehow arrived at the same conclusion about reality. Fear is an illusion that keeps us asleep. And love is the frequency or the thing that wakes us up. Fear shrinks self and love expands the self. Fear breeds ego and love dissolves it. Fear isolates you and love reminds you who the hell you actually are. Fear makes you chase approval, validation, and money and control. It makes us compare ourselves to everybody else. Fear makes us live like something is missing. Love, in the ancient sense, isn't romantic. What they mean is oneness. It's alignment. It's essentially the recognition that we're made of the same stuff, the same light or the same source, whatever you want to call it. That's why fear feels bad, because it's biologically incompatible with what you actually are. Every mistake you've ever made, every relationship that blew up, every regret you carry, every time you sabotage your own potential, it's all fear. Every spiritual leader across time was basically saying, you're suffering because you're believing a lie. The moment that you drop fear, you don't just all of a sudden find love. You're not finding love. You're returning to it. It's your default state. That's why we're born with it. It's the only real thing underneath all the noise is just that. But all the ancients didn't stop there. They all said the same thing next. Something that modern science is finally catching up to. And if love is real and fear is an illusion, then who's creating the illusion? Your mind, which leads us to truth number three. Your mind is not a camera, it is a projector. So your brain doesn't record reality, it generates reality. I'm talking about the most ancient spiritual teaching on earth. And it's the most modern scientific discovery at the same time. But let's go back. If you look at the Dhammapada, we see what you think you become. If you look at the Hermetic texts, the all is mind. In the Hindu Vedanta, we see Maya, the world you perceive is shaped by the mind's illusions. And then back to the Upanishads again. The universe arises from consciousness. That's pretty straightforward. And even looking back at Plato, he says reality is the moving image of eternity. And the translation for that would be the mind shapes what you perceive. If you look at quantum physics, observation changes the behavior of matter, physical particles. So I think the meaning here is consciousness is not inside the universe. The universe is inside consciousness. Every single culture was screaming this exact same thing. Your mind is not reacting to life. It's constructing the version of life that you're experiencing. Your fears, your beliefs, your identity, your memories, your stories, all those patterns you have in your life. We think that they're interpretations. What they are is filters that reshape reality before reality reaches you. This is why two people can live through the exact same moment and experience two completely different things. This is why suffering usually comes from inside and not outside. This is why so many ancient texts focus way more on inner world than outer world. And this is probably also why every spiritual path teaches stillness and silence and presence and meditation and surrender. And I think this is because the moment that we stop letting fear hijack the projector, we start seeing reality pretty clearly for the first time. If your mind shapes reality, then every limitation you hold is one that you unconsciously built. And every breakthrough that you're chasing is just one little thought pattern away. Truths 1, 2, and 3 combine into a single explosive idea. If you're not separate, if fear isn't real, if your mind is essentially shaping everything, then the only thing standing between you and freedom is the part of you that believes otherwise. And this brings us to the most dangerous truth of all. The enemy is not the world. The enemy is the ego. So if those first three truths show you what you are, the fourth truth shows you what's been blocking you from the beginning. So the ego is the only real enemy here. It's the only enemy that you're going to face. No demons, no bad luck, no other people, not the world. Every ancient text, every mystic, all these enlightened teachers, they all gave us the exact same warning. The thing that we call us, the thing that you call you, is the thing that's hurting you. If we look in the Bhagavad Gita, we see the self must conquer the lower self. If we read Plato, he says, all sins come from excess self-love. If you read the words of Jesus, unless a man dies to himself, he cannot live. In the words of the Buddha, suffering begins with attachment to the self. In the Tao Te Ching, we see he who defines himself can't know who he truly is. Different continents, different countries, same diagnosis. The ego is not your personality or your identity. It's not your sense of I. Let me give you a definition of ego that's going to change your life if you adopt it. The ego is the story that you built to survive your fears. It's a mask. It's a guardrail. It's a little protective suit that we stitch together from trauma and insecurity and expectations and some conditioning. And that suit becomes our prison. But the ego desires one big thing, separation. It needs to feel separate to exist. Separate from other people, separate from the big universe, separate from the divine, separate from truth. The ego has to be able to compare. It feeds on better than, worse than, smarter than, more deserving than, more important than. So basically, the ego needs three things. It needs hierarchy, conflict, and recognition. So it needs to win, to be right, to be special, to get defended by you. This is why it never shuts the F up. The ego is the voice that says, they're judging you. You're not enough. You're falling behind. What if you lose everything? Or what if they don't like you? You need to prove yourself. You need more. You need control. But here's the ancient secret almost nobody realizes. The ego's entire existence is based on fear, and fear is already not real. This means that your ego is a hallucination. It's a survival instinct that doesn't understand who you actually are. You're the ocean. The ego is a ripple that thinks it's the entire Pacific Ocean. You are the divine. The ego is a child pretending to be the king. This is why every ancient tradition told you to let it go. Not because they wanted you to be moral or have some enlightenment and go out and buy linen pants and wooden bead necklaces and shit like that. They didn't want obedience or anything, or even purity. It's because you can't experience truth while you're holding on to something that isn't true. You can't be infinite while you're clinging on to a story that makes you small. You can't feel oneness while you're protecting a self that doesn't exist. You can't wake up while you're defending the dream. And once you drop the ego, even if it's for a little second, you'll feel something terrifying and beautiful. You never needed it. You were always complete. The armor was the wound. Ancient teachings weren't obsessed with humility. They were obsessed with liberation. And once the ego falls apart, the final truth appears immediately. And this is the final truth that ties the entire universe together. This is truth number 5. Everything is connected. This one shows up everywhere, from ancient temples to modern physics laboratories. Everything's connected. Everything is one system. Everything influences everything. That's how everything it gets. In the Hermetic texts, we see this principle of as above, so below. In the Kabbalah, we see all creation emerges from a single tree of life. In quantum physics, no particle is truly separate. Every particle has some entanglement. In Taoism, we see this idea of opposites are not enemies. They're complementary forces of the same source. In the Mayan Popol Vuh, this is where we see the universe is one living organism. In Buddhism, we have the concept of what's called interbeing. Nothing exists independently. And in Sufi mysticism, the soul is a thread in the same cosmic fabric. Even if you look at the Egyptian pyramid texts, we see the soul returns to the stars from which it came. In ancient Native American wisdom, they have a phrase that's, I think, pronounced Mitakuya Oyasin, which is, we are all relatives, essentially saying, with all beings, I am related. Nothing stands alone. So every action ripples, every emotion radiates, every intention vibrates through the whole. You are not some separate node in the universe. You're a neuron in a cosmic brain firing inside of infinity. And your life is not happening to you. Your life is happening with you, through you, and as you. And suddenly, all 5 truths click together like a lock snapping open. You're not separate. Fear is an illusion. Your mind shapes reality. Ego's the enemy. Everything's connected. So if all that's true, then you aren't a human trying to become spiritual. You are the universe temporarily being human. You're already spiritual. So everything you've ever been scared of, everything you've obsessed over, everything you've doubted in your life, everything that you've ever questioned before, comes down to remembering what you were before the world told you who to be. And that's what the ancients were trying to wake us up to. So if the ancients all knew this, if the truths were sitting in the open for thousands of years, how the hell did we lose it? How did humanity go from cosmic awareness to this psychological dumpster fire that we're living in today? It wasn't a conspiracy. Personally, I think it was something a lot simpler. It's much darker and it's a lot more human. We just forgot who the hell we were. We got hypnotized by who we thought we needed to be. So the moment that humans started building civilizations, we needed to gather a bunch of resources. We needed to protect our borders. We needed to survive these crazy harsh winters. Fear became a tool. And then, after tens of thousands of years, fear became a habit. And then fear became a culture. And everything that fear touches, obviously, it corrupts. That's why every single ancient text, even the Bible, They warn us about the same exact traps of greed and ego and power and materialism and comparison, desire, control, and attachment. They weren't trying to teach us to be moral. This had nothing to do with being a moral person. They were describing psychological malware. In Tao Te Ching, when wealth and honors lead to arrogance, it brings evil. If you read the Quran, you're going to see, do not commit abuse on the earth, spreading corruption. In the Bible, it says, do not store up treasures on earth. You read the Buddha, and it says, clinging is the root of suffering. Every tradition saw this coming. The moment humans forgot who they were, they try to fill this emptiness with every single thing they can except the truth. And that's exactly what we did as a people. We built entire civilizations on top of a lie that we're separate. These giant economies on top of the lie that we're all lacking. And we all built identities on the lie that we're not enough. The ego that starts off as a small little tribal safety mechanism became this global operating system. We started comparing and competing and hoarding and fearing and posturing, consuming, scrolling, performing. We turned life into a weird little scoreboard, and we made success a really, really good-looking costume. And we traded all of our meaning for dopamine. We replaced being still and mindful, maybe just, let's just call it boredom. We replaced boredom and silence with lots and lots of noise and distractions. But I think the biggest one of all is we stopped asking, who am I? And we started asking, who do they think I am? We traded a lot of truth for distraction, and the worst part is the distractions got really, really effing good. Scary, sexy, addictively good. So we engineered apps that hijack our nervous system. We have news cycles that feed off of our cortisol and our stress. We have algorithms now that weaponize our attention. We have cultures that are built on outrage and tribal division. If you live in America, you're in the middle of it. And we didn't just forget all these ancient truths. We built a world designed to choke the life out of them. And if you look around, you can see the symptoms everywhere. Anxiety's normal. Depression is common. Addiction is everywhere. Loneliness is an epidemic we're in the middle of. Attention spans are collapsing. People don't even know how to be bored. Replaced wisdom with content. Contemplation with distraction. We became the most technologically advanced species in history, and simultaneously the most spiritually disconnected. Again, it's not because this truth just disappeared somehow. It's because the noise got louder than the signal. The ancient warning was not a metaphor. It was a prophecy. And the prophecy is, if you forget yourself, you will forget everything that matters. But there's another part the ancients also agreed on. Once the illusion gets to the point where it gets unbearable, once the noise gets super overwhelming, once the ego starts to look like a crazy Jenga tower, that's when people start to wake up. And right now, in this era, in this generation, we are seeing that start to happen. The illusions are cracking. The distractions aren't working as well as they used to. My friend Sean Ryan did an entire series about this called PSYOP. People are starving for something real, and they don't know why. And this brings us to this final section. What did the ancients say about this awakening? Is it really an awakening? And what is it going to mean for our life? So if forgetting makes us suffer, then remembering is what sets us free. And every ancient tradition, everyone, with no exception, they didn't just warn us about ego and fear and illusion. It also left very detailed instructions for what happens after the collapse. They left us a roadmap for waking up. And the patterns are unbelievably clear once you know what to look for. And they don't give you a bunch of rules and dogma and rituals, just internal transformations. So let me show you exactly what they said. Number one, waking up begins with truth. In the Bible, in John 8:32, the truth will set you free. Not obedience, not faith, truth. Truth about yourself, about the mind, about fear and ego. Truth is the solvent that dissolves the illusion. In the Avestra, which is a Zoroastrian text, we see the quote, "Truth is the best good. It is the everlasting light." From the Buddha, we see the quote, "There are three things that cannot remain hidden, the sun, the moon, and the truth." Every awakening starts here. The moment we stop running from reality and start seeing it. This is why suffering is what happens before awakening, because pain breaks the illusion that we all kind of hide behind. So number two, waking up requires presence. Every tradition says awakening doesn't happen in the future, not someday. It doesn't happen when you're healed and calm and ready. The Buddha tells us, don't dwell in the past, don't dream of the future, concentrate the mind on the present moment. In the Tao Te Ching, they say, if you're depressed, you're living in the past. If you're anxious, you're living in the future. If you're at peace, you're living in the present. And Jesus said this in the book of Matthew 6:34. Do not worry about tomorrow. If we read Plato, he says, time is the moving image of eternity. It's just right now. Presence is not a spiritual idea. You can get rid of the whole concept of the word spiritual. It's a doorway back into reality. The ancients were not saying be mindful. What they're telling us is stop living in an illusion. Don't live in a fake world. Number three, waking up requires compassion and service. And every single ancient text links awakening with compassion. And it's not compassion because you're a morally good person. It's compassion because you recognize the truth. Because if I see you as myself, compassion isn't morality. It's just me taking care of me. If you read the Quran, you see the quote, give to the needy, the orphan, the captive. In the Bible, it says, love your neighbor as thyself, or as yourself. In the Analects, Confucius 12:2 says, a gentleman seeks virtue. And Plato says, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. Compassion is something that we recognize. We don't learn it, we recognize it. So once you stop believing that you're separate, love and compassion becomes the only behavior that makes any sense at all. It doesn't mean like I'm a good moral person, it just means I'm acting in something that makes perfect sense. Step four, waking up requires stillness and self-knowledge. This shows up everywhere. In the Upanishads, we see, know thyself and you shall know the universe. Socrates said the unexamined life is not worth living. In the Yoga Sutras, yoga is the stilling of the mind. In the ancient Nag Hammadi text, which is in Gnostic Christianity, it's a type of Christianity, know yourself and you will be free. And the Buddha tells us, in stillness, truth reveals itself. Awakening is not adding new ideas. Never, ever let somebody sell you on this idea. It's not going out and buying beads and adding new ideas. This is removing noise. Awakening is about stripping stuff away, removing illusions and stories and ego and fear, until what's left is the thing that was always there. It's you without a distortion. And number five, waking up transforms suffering into wisdom. In the Bible, in Romans 5:3, suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope. In Buddhism, we have the Four Noble Truths. Suffering is the path to enlightenment. If you look in the Bhagavad Gita, you'll see, in compassion, I destroy the darkness of ignorance with the lamp of knowledge. In the Egyptian pyramid texts, they say the soul ascends through trials. The ancients are not giving us some brochure or promising us a life with no suffering. They're promising you a life where suffering becomes a catalyst for something. Which brings us to point number six about awakening. Waking up is just remembering what you are. When you put all these pieces together, truth, presence, compassion, stillness, transformation, every ancient tradition lands in the same place. Awakening is not becoming something new. It's remembering something ancient, something deeper and original that you've always been. If you look in the Kabbalah, they say each soul is a spark of the infinite. In the Emerald Tablet, it says all is one. In the Popol Vuh, humans are the divine remembering itself. The final step of awakening isn't learning a bunch of new motivational bullshit. It's recognition. It's a flash of remembering, oh, I'm not separate. I never was. I just forgot for a minute. Awakening is not a destination that you get to. It is a return home. And it will be shitty at first. And if this didn't feel new to you, it's because it wasn't. You are remembering. I think the real unsettling part isn't how radical any of this is. It's how obvious it feels once we hear it. You were never missing something. You were taught to forget. And awakening doesn't feel like fireworks and stuff like that. It feels like stress. Then it feels like relief. It's like you're setting down a huge-ass backpack that you didn't realize you were carrying because you've been holding it your entire freaking life. The pressure to become somebody, to prove something, to defend yourself, all of that built on this misunderstanding. The world does not change when you wake up. Your relationship to the world is what changes. Fear loses its authority. Ego loses its grip on you. The noise stops convincing you that it matters. It's just because you saw something clearly. And the truth was never really hidden. It was just waiting. Love you. Take care.
Why should I be shunned?
Thank you for listening, and check out my website at alphamalebuddhistpodcast.com. That's alpha-male-buddhist-podcast.com, where you could see all of my content links for my Instagram, Rumble, Telegram, Linktree, and Twitter sites. Also, visit my online merch store where you can check out my t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, baseball caps. All links are in the description. My email address is alphamalebuddhist@gmail.com and miguel@alphamalebuddhistpodcast.com. Again, thank you for listening.